Tell me if this sounds familiar. You call your internet provider to try and reduce your bill. You spend an hour on the phone, maybe more. If you're lucky, they'll cut $10. Maybe, just maybe, increase your internet speed. The digital divide has been a struggle for Canadians for far too long. And this past year, with everyone forced to be at home, to work, study, play, and even access healthcare online, access to affordable internet has never been a bigger challenge. The City of Toronto has a plan. It wants to build its own high-speed broadband network, starting with pilot projects in three low-income neighborhoods. Will this model provide accessible, affordable internet for Canadians? Can this model be the one that's copied across the country? I'm Fatma Sayed, sitting in for Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Vas Bednar is the executive director of McMaster University's Public Policy Master's Program and author of the newsletter Regs to Riches. Hi, Vas. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. What's up?
We're here to talk about internet, and specifically, we're here to talk about Toronto's really cool, at least from the outset, pilot program to provide high-speed internet in three various communities. I'm wondering if you can start by telling us a little more about this project and what you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just early days, but the City of Toronto did recently approve a plan to build a public internet network. Many have pointed out that this network will be cheaper than the dominant telecoms in our nation's oligopoly here. And it's just early days in that the city's going to start exploring what it would look like to build and then own fiber optic conduits that are designed to service, you know, essentially poor racialized neighborhoods that have low uptakes of existing internet service. And, you know, this is fascinating because typically when we talk about the digital divide in an urban context, the divide is a function of affordability, right? It's not about the for lack of a better phrase, penetration of the infrastructure to, you know, have the option to have internet. But what we're seeing and what's become even more stark and pronounced in the pandemic is that when we've lost those third spaces, you know, access to libraries, access to, say, a McDonald's or a Tim Hortons that has free Wi-Fi, it's really, really important that people have the option to connect given our increasingly digital society. And it doesn't seem that we can continue to rely on private companies to facilitate the affordability that people need. And I'm excited about the City of Toronto's experiment.
Before we dig any deeper into the issue, I do want to be transparent with our listeners that this show is owned by one of the major internet providers in Canada. But I do want to understand the project a little better. Vas, it sounds like the City of Toronto's plan isn't taking on the issue of there being no internet in the city. Clearly, there is internet in the city. But is it accurate for me to understand it as trying to solve for internet being too expensive in certain pockets of the city, or that there isn't enough high-speed internet in certain pockets of the city?
Yeah, they're solving for a quality and an access gap that is perpetuated by the, you know, you could say inaction or distraction from large companies that typically provide those connections.
So how would this work, Vas? What would the City of Toronto have to do to provide high-speed, affordable internet to these low-income neighborhoods?
Well, I mean, it's a building piece. Something that's interesting, if you look a little bit at the history of how we've cobbled together this internet, I'll use the word system really loosely, is just take a step back and think about how the internet evolved, right? So we started having the internet come to people's houses as kind of a perk or a privilege, you know, not a necessity through telephone lines. There's also the option to have internet come to a household through a cable TV line. And now there's fiber optic cable, which kind of accomplishes all of the above. So we've built out this patchwork, but also we need to be thinking about internet infrastructure when we're doing other building in the city, right? For instance, when we have housing projects, when we have private projects, when we have transportation projects, we should also be thinking about, is this an opportunity to improve access to the grid? Should we also be laying down cable, you know, so that it's not an afterthought and so that it's not a patchwork? The benefit to having publicly owned digital infrastructure is, you know, many people can benefit from the accessibility and prices. Universities, schools, we've read and understood a lot more about the digital divides at schools. But yeah, definitely a lot of benefit for other public institutions as well.
So it sounds like the City of Toronto is solving the issue of access. But let's also talk about affordability, because I have personally spent so much time having really long, excruciating phone calls trying to reduce my internet bill. And they're exhausting. And I was surprised to learn so many people have had similar experiences. So what could the City of Toronto do to bring the cost of internet down?
Okay, so you're going to get kind of a complicated answer for me to start, but bear with me. And first of all, like I definitely hear you on the cost of internet. I think no matter where you are on the socioeconomic spectrum, Canadians are frustrated with that monthly recurring charge. I remember as a graduate student, when I moved to Toronto, I actually wrote all my neighbors like a little card and was like, hey, I'm your neighbor and like blah, blah, blah. And do you want to share internet? Like, I just thought it was nuts that I was going to like, we were all going to pay the same monthly amount and we were essentially living in like boxes next to each other. So that was a good way to let my neighbors know that I was bonkers and no one wanted to share internet with me. Anyway, what can the city do? I think the city is really, at the municipal level, is really limited. Like, part of why this is such a bold move is because the city's sort of saying, we're going to go and do this on our own and we're going to own this infrastructure because there are too many Torontonians that don't have access to high-speed internet and we won't stand for that. But when you think about other policy levers, there's so much more that can be done because that second dimension of the digital divide or the affordability problem, like one, it's so blunt. The most primary way we understand the digital divide is, do you have access to reliable high-speed internet or not, right? It's that basic binary. But once you do have the option to have access, that's where you get into these pricing issues. So the question is, why are the prices of internet in Canada so high? I believe for wireless internet, Canada's amongst the third highest prices countrywide. Here's the answer. I promised you I'd get there. I pointed to that system we kind of cobbled together over time. And no disrespect to the internet system, it evolved as the medium evolved. But what happened is that in Canada, companies are able to compete both on facilities and systems. So what that means is they can own the cables, right? And then compete on the service that goes through the cables. So the internet, the TV. That's why you often see like bundled deals, right? Because one company wants to kind of sign you up for everything through those wires or that wire. This isn't the case in every other jurisdiction. Like Australia has certain companies that compete on facilities and then certain companies that compete on services. I hope you're not asleep yet because I'm going to tell you why that matters. It matters because in order for independent ISPs, indie service providers, say like maybe tech savvy, to access this existing infrastructure, they kind of rent it out from the big guys, right? And a few years ago, the CRTC, I think it was 2016, the CRTC ruled that, okay, you actually have to share the space. Like you can't, you know, fundamentally exclude other providers from accessing the network. What happens is that inadvertently, the big telecoms collect a lot of information about their competitors. So this isn't a privacy consideration by any means. I know we get really worried about that, and that's appropriate. It's really just about the business information. It's pure business intelligence that comes through the access to physical infrastructure, which means that they can really compete on price. So second thing I want to say before you ask me another question, which is just that I wanted to point to a really interesting letter that TechSavvy has out with the Competition Bureau right now. And they're sort of saying that, you know, this is intolerable that companies borrow discount brand names So Rogers sells discount internet through Fido. Bell does it through Virgin. Videotron does it through Fizz, which is such a great name. And Shaw does it through their Freedom brand. So this, you know, creates the illusion that there's more competition than there really is, and means that competitors in the space that can try to offer a better price find it almost impossible to do so. And that's a long way of telling you why the kind of structure, the economic structure, the business environment of internet in Canada is so challenging to innovate in, I'll say, which is why, again, back to why what the city of Toronto is doing is fascinating, because it's just rejecting that model. And it's saying we need a new one if we want to support our citizens to be online, which is super cool.
It's kind of like taking some power away from the bigger telecoms in favor of providing internet to communities, right?
Yeah, you said it.
So this is interesting because this isn't just a Toronto problem. Like it is a countrywide problem. I read a CRTC report that, you know, recommends that every household in Canada should have access to broadband with download speeds of at least 50 Mbps. And the federal government has set a goal to have Canada-wide broadband by 2030. But at the moment, at least according to the CRTC, in rural areas, only 40% of households have this high-speed internet. And in First Nation communities, it's estimated that just 30% of these households have internet connections with the recommended speed. That's awful to think about, especially when we consider that there's a pandemic and everyone's just working online. If Toronto's pilot project is successful, could it change the landscape across the country?
I mean, hopefully we'll see replication from other municipalities in terms of going that route. There are some great examples. I think the city of Toronto had cited, you know, Olds, Alberta, and some other examples. Like, Toronto's not necessarily the first and only mover in this space. But in terms of introducing like a nonprofit internet option, yes, again, absolutely fascinating. But if you want to go back to the federal government's investments to encourage more broadband investment, again, if you look at those structural factors, it's sort of a negative externality. But because the big players are obligated to share the infrastructure that they build, the business case is even worse for them, right? So again, not to keep bringing tech savvy into it, but say Bell lays down cable to a super rural area, they have to then share that access to tech savvy so their competitors can thrive and they have even more of a sunk cost. So you sort of see that perversity in terms of why those places stay underserviced. And the other part is, look, Canada's a huge country. It's not very dense. That's challenging for the internet. Some people have pointed to, you know, the power and potential of low orbit satellites to kind of supplement connectivity. But there are a lot of challenges with just trying to rely on that. What I'd love to see, you know, I'm a big fan of temporary interventions, pilots. I think policymakers are really bad at thinking about ideas that aren't forever and aren't for everyone. And I wonder what we could do as we try to get more people connected. You know, is there a band-aid interim solution to get more people access to the internet at home? Should a major telecom company be donating internet sticks or, you know, running ahead and pledging those investments? Or should we have more private investment? You know, certainly it's important for the economy to have people online. Forget just education and health and the social connection and mental health. But I also wonder if on a, I guess, more macro national level, we're being absolutely as creative as we could be in this space.
You said that, you know, Canada's a large country, so this is obviously a very large problem to solve. Mm. But I want to challenge that a little bit, because there are other countries that are just as big. And I'm thinking specifically of our neighbor, the United States, where several municipalities have created successful projects to provide high-speed, affordable internet to their residents. And they're attracting business and investments to their regions by doing so. So is it a lack of will in Canada that is stalling our efforts, or is it a lack of funding? What specifically is the core problem that is, you know, extending the issue of the digital divide for so many years?
You know, I think partially it was, we've known it's a problem, right? Like the problem description or the problem admiration has always been there. I think it catapulted in terms of a priority because it became so much more pronounced in the pandemic. You know, there are other dimensions of the digital divide that we haven't quite pointed to yet, but say you live in a lower income neighborhood or a priority neighborhood in Toronto, and you do have decent internet access at home, well, you may be a family that doesn't have one device for everyone, or you may not have the literacy to use the device, right? So again, losing those third spaces, losing supportive environments with free access to the internet, like libraries, which are crucial hubs of connectivity, as well as other places where there was free public Wi-Fi. Don't forget, years ago, we were, you know, maybe back when I was slipping cards under my neighbor's doors, we were debating and thinking about, you know, free public Wi-Fi across the city of Toronto. We still kind of get excited about what it will look like when the entire Toronto subway service has internet so that we can be productive while we're underground on our commutes. And that's a different conversation, right? That's about free access in, I'll say, shared third spaces. But the pandemic took those third spaces away, which means that it was even more of a problem to not have internet at home. And we really have to think hard about why it is that people don't have internet at home. And again, it's not just the affordability piece. There are reasons for the prices staying high, and there are reasons that certain jurisdictions are underserviced.
So keeping that in mind then, is the pilot project that the City of Toronto is creating a sustainable model as a solution? Or is there a better way to think about the approach they're taking?
Yeah, what's interesting about the City of Toronto is that they're looking to unlock the value and kind of maximize existing public assets, right? So the proposal that went to council asked that the city consider how they can use existing public fiber optic cables, right? These are owned by places like the TTC, the Toronto Public Library, schools, police, or other utilities. And then the city would kind of let other independent providers, or like, right, they would let the private sector pay to tap into that infrastructure. But it's that extra investment that'll unlock other areas. So much of our lives play out online. And it's not, the internet is not just this virtual world where it's like a Sim City, or you have your digital double or your digital twin. It's a conduit to a particular layer of our everyday lives. And again, people, it's an essential service. And I think the CRTC declared it an essential service, again, a few years ago, back in 2016, 2017. But in terms of what exactly it looks like to be essential, we're still filling in the blanks.
Well, if you had a crystal ball and you could look to, I don't know, 5 or 10 years down the line, do you see Canada meeting its goals to provide, you know, universal broadband internet across the country to every single community, rural, urban, First Nations, low income, by 2030? Do you see that happening?
You know, I think we can do it. I think we've identified it's a problem. I think the broadband fund is promising. Let's see how it goes, who's getting funding, how long these projects take. Yes, we're going to have to be a little bit patient, and everything we want is going to come a touch later than we need. But there are other innovations on the horizon that we can work with. Again, the low orbit satellites are something. They're part of this picture. We also talk about 5G sometimes, and I don't mean to be a 5G booster. That's not my intent. But what we should do with any potential rollout of 5G is actually do what we should have done years and years ago, which is center and privilege rural and Indigenous communities when we think about those future digital infrastructure investments. So if we're going to eventually adopt this technology, 5G, we need to privilege those underserved communities in a more intentional way. We don't need to start with cities. We don't need to start with smart cities. That would be a really powerful choice on behalf of Canada and Canadians to say that we will start where this is much harder to do. We're not going to press the easy button, and we're going to focus on access for the least connected communities in our country. That's something I'd love to see, and I'd like to see it before 2030. If you can make that happen, let me know.
I'm going to go and buy my wand right now. Thanks so much for being here, Vass. This was really interesting.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon.
That was Vass Bednar, the executive director of McMaster University's MPP program and author of the newsletter Regs to Riches. And that was The Big Story. You can find more at thebigstorypodcast.ca. For questions and comments, find us on Twitter at thebigstoryfpn. You can send us an email, thebigstorypodcast@rci.rogers.com. I'm Fatma Sayed. Thanks for listening.